On today's episode of the Fumble Rooski podcast, the Patriots have won their seventh straight game. Boy, are they contenders now? I'd say so. Bills losing their third game in five matchups, losing to the Dolphins 30-13. The Rams and the Seahawks each putting up 40-plus against NFC West rivals. Who's going to take the division out west over there? And later on, top three, bottom three, and recap of Monday Night Football. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns. Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
This is the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88.18 Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. He's CJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich. No Justin Tucker, unfortunately, today. A little under the weather, so hopefully Pookie will feel okay for Friday's episode. But we're going to start out with a bang. The New England Patriots, a wild win against the Buccaneers, 28-23, picking up their seventh straight win. Boy, they're just rolling. They are rolling. This is a weird game, to say the least. And we kind of saw a little bit of vintage Patriots a little bit, right? With Pats getting the score to end the first half, get the ball in the second half, go up by two scores. Very typical of the original dynasty when Belichick was around. And Mike Vrabel just laying his nuts on the table multiple times in this game, including at the end of the first half, as I mentioned, going 0.
Holy. You know,
no, Adam, I can't stay on this topic. I have to move on.
We can tease it for later because we're having a new
segment. All right,
just
fine.
Take it away.
Fine. Now I got to try to focus up again.
No, I can do it. It's cool. So we're going to talk more about this later, but we want to tell you that as we're recording it right now, some news has just broken. Giants head coach Brian Daboll has been fired. He is now the second head coach to be canned this season. The first, of course, being the dude for the Titans there, former Bengals OC. You know, he's so forgettable, you know, already. But yeah, Frank, so Daboll is out. This, you know, obviously comes after they lose a heartbreaker to Chicago. And a lot of people were, it's funny, a lot of people were saying, at this point, keep Shane and ditch Daboll. And it's looking that the Giants just might do that. And we're going to talk more about this later. But Chris, back to you. We're talking about New England.
All right. Yeah. Not get myself back under control here. Mike Vrabel, end of the first half. It's so Drake May, like, looks like he was trying to do a QB sneak and ends up just falling down, and they just wasted it down and then proceeded to not get in the end zone for two straight plays, waste the clock down to 2 seconds, and just throw a little FU jump ball to Stephon Diggs to get six. And then Trevion Henderson, first drive of the second half, house call for him. Two house calls for Trevion Henderson. And imagine being so fast and so good that when you break out for a touchdown, you have so much space and that you have enough time to look over at the sideline to see if he should go down or not. Imagine that. Drake May, amazing, per usual. Some amazing third down throws that he made, one where he avoided Vita Vea with like a two-handed hands on the ball swim move and finding Mac Hollins over the middle. Two amazing throws from Mac Hollins, or to Mac Hollins, on third down from Drake May. Stephon Diggs had a solid game as well. Just overall a great win for the Patriots, and hats off to the defense as well. That defense was on the field for a long time in that second half. And besides that 92-yard drive that they let up a touchdown on, they were nails. They were nails. Getting stop after stop when they needed it. So hats off to them. CJ, your thoughts?
Well, as I'm making the thumbnail here for Dable getting canned, I do want to say there was this narrative going into the game that said New England wasn't legit. They hadn't beaten anyone good. Buffalo was a fluke. You know, they did beat Carolina, who is above 500 or is now 500, was above 500, you know, last week. And, you know, but that didn't count. You know, like nothing was serious. All right. Well, they just beat Tampa. Now what? Oh. Let me guess. Here's a Tampa faithful are saying, but our injuries. Bullshit. No. Hang your heads in shame. No, shut up. Just shut up. The Pats were missing Stevenson, Booty, and Ellis. They're like dropping the coverage linebacker, although he's not, you know, shouldn't be doing that, but whatever. So yeah, we were also missing RB1. We were also missing one of our better receivers who's leading the team in touchdowns. And we were missing our main cover linebacker. So don't cry to me about injuries, because New England was banged up too. The injury excuse really isn't working for Tampa here. And this was a really good game. Of course, you know, both teams getting their licks in. Bucks had that 92-yard drive. Mayfield did have a cool touchdown. Granted, it was in garbage time, but I digress. Defense was getting to Drake May a lot. A lot of batted passes. They did have a lucky interception in the end zone. You know, cool fingertip grab by Tyke Smith. But at the end of the day, the Pats prevailed with three separate touchdowns that were over 50 yards. And that's the thing. The Tampa defense has been good. Jamel Dean, he's not getting his love. As a Pats fan, I'll give him some love right now. He's coming in, I believe, like allowing like the lowest quarterback rating in the entire league. It was like in the 30s or something like that. You know, you have Vita Vea, you know, just being an absolute game wrecker, Yaya Diabe, and, you know, among others, you know, able to get home and attack the quarterback. Pat's O-line only giving up one sack, Drake May being the second most sack QB. A lot of those are on him, but he's getting the ball out faster, and that was something that I think kind of flustered the Tampa defense, because, like I said, I believe they only got one sack on him. But the thing is, that Tampa defense, which has become one of the sturdier units in the league, at least in the front seven, and, you know, you got Jamel Dean, Antoine Winfield in the backfield, they couldn't stop giving up chunk plays. Like I said, New England, three touchdowns, all from rookies, by the way, Travion Henderson and Kyle Williams, of 50 or more yards. Yeah, bad. That's like, you can't do that. I mean, granted, the Bucs are also contenders, but at the end of the day, it's no wonder why they lost. You got gashed for big plays repeatedly, you know, and the, Kyle Williams get, you know, just turn on the Jets for a 72-yard touchdown, and Travion Henderson getting two. And at the end of the day, just their defense collapsed. You know, there's only like 2-3 minutes left in the game. Pats have to whittle down the clock, but I mean, they do, but you also know that a touchdown, that's basically game. And it's 2nd and 9, and New England's in their side of the field. And the simplest way to put it is Travion Henderson called game, took it like over 60 yards to the house. And yeah, you know, Tampa did get that touchdown in garbage time, but that was really it. They dressed up the score a bit, but honestly, New England had it. They went into Tampa, now an NFL best, as you can see, 5-0 on the road. I'm sorry, the soft schedule narrative really doesn't hold as much weight, knowing that they beat Carolina, who, yeah, they're 500. Shut up. Just keep crying. They beat Buffalo in Buffalo, and they beat Tampa in Tampa. And once again, the injuries don't count because New England was missing Ramondre Stevenson and Kayshon Booty. So it quite literally evens out. So there you have it.
Yeah, I agree. This was a big win for the Pats, of course, as you mentioned, 5-0 now on the road. Road Warriors, the resiliency that they have on the road is insane. And of course, like one of the big things that the Patriots have against them, you could say, is their soft schedule. Well, no kidding, because, well, they're playing they were the one of the softest teams in the league last year, which was good for worst in the AFC East. So they're going to be playing teams that were the worst in their division last year. Of course, like the big, when you're talking about good teams in the league, they take care of the teams that they're supposed to beat. And then, like, yeah, they're not going to win every single game that of like teams that they're going to be playing that are contenders. So you could make the argument that maybe they won't beat the Bills this time around, but this win against the Bucks shows that they will be contenders in the league this season. Maybe a Super Bowl, at the very least the playoffs. And I love Drake May.
Yeah, this game also, I think, did a lot to establish the run as well. You know, Trayvon Henderson, those 2 big yards, 14 carries, 147 yards, 10 and a half yards a carry, and 2 touchdowns as well. So, yeah. Also, this game showed something we haven't seen from a lot of recent Pats teams. Actual, like, explosive plays. We haven't seen that in a bit from them, and 3 touchdowns, like I said, of over 50 yards. That, and doing that against the Tampa defense when you need it, is just insane. So, yeah, if you had any doubts before, there are no more doubts. They are, in fact, legit.
Yeah. The offense hasn't been this good since Mac Jones's rookie year, which is wild to say. All right. Anything else you want to touch on from this?
No, I'm good.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We're still going to hold off on Brian Daboll for a hot sec, but obviously he's well on our conscience. But we're going to quickly talk about the Bills first, now losing 3 of their last 5, and now technically a game back in the division, but really 2 games in the AFC East. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
All right, time to talk about the Bills losing 3 of their last 5 and a embarrassing loss against the Dolphins, 30-13 on the road. I may add as well. This was especially a big loss. Obviously, they've lost 3 of their last 5, which started with the Patriots on Sunday Night Football. And it seemed like that they were back in the right direction, especially out of the bye. They blew out the Panthers 40-9 on the road. They get a huge win against the Chiefs 28-21 at home. It seems like they're in the right direction again. And then this game happens, and boy, just an ugly, ugly game. Josh Allen played terrible. Tua was dicing up the Bills defense as well. They could not tackle to save their life. Devon Achane ran for 174 yards and 2 touchdowns. Jalen Waddle had a day. And now they find themselves now 2 games back in the AFC East. Obviously, record-wise, it's 1 game, but because the Pats have the tiebreaker, it's 2 games. So the Bills are in a bad, bad spot. Josh Allen had himself 2 turnovers, an interception, and a fumble lost. It was kind of like seeing the Josh Allen of the Josh Allen previous to his MVP season again. And the Bills are in a bad spot. They're in a bad spot. Now, they're going to be fine, but they're also going up against the Buccaneers next week. Then they got a test against a tough Texans defense the week after on Thursday Night Football, a short week. So you got an interesting 5 days coming up. Not from here, but from Sunday to that Thursday. It's gonna be interesting. CJ, your thoughts?
I mean, obviously, as long as the Bills have Josh Allen, they're going to be good. They're going to be in the playoff hunt. They're always going to be a threat. We know that. But losing three in your last five. What the hell is going on? This is such a random team. They put belt to ass against the Carolina Panthers, did they not?
Yep.
And they beat the Kansas City Chiefs, and then you get steamrolled by the Miami Dolphins and Mike McDaniel, a.k.a. Dead Man Walking, and you lost in an upset in Buffalo to New England. This is such a random team. You have no idea which Bills team you are going to get day to day. You know, and it's not like they've got, you know, really many injury excuses to point to. I mean, yeah, losing Ed Oliver sucks, but, you know, Matt Milano's back. The defensive backfield is in relatively solid shape. You still have Khalil Shakir. You still have Dalton Kincaid. You still have James Cook. And also, you have Keon Coleman, but then again, Keon Coleman hasn't been playing all that well. So yeah, do with that what you will. I don't understand this. And it's not like, you know, I always like to say, oh, hey, it's a division game. Anything can happen. Maybe Miami would have kept it close, is what I thought would be worst case scenario, but never my wildest dreams. Did I expect a 3-score game and Buffalo to be on the losing end of said 3-score game? And yeah, I know it's in Miami, and for those northern teams, Miami could be a really awful place to play, but that's just gross. And you want to know what's even grosser? Their remaining schedule. Next, you got to play the Buccaneers, and after they lost to New England, they're going to be out for blood. They're going to be at Houston. You should win that, granted. However, that defense is a little scary. Then you're going to be in Pittsburgh. Who knows which Mike Tomlin team you're going to be getting, because, you know, yeah, one day they're losing to the Chargers, then they're beating they beat someone good recently. I don't really watch the Steelers.
Last week.
Bro, yeah, I'm sorry. You know, the Mike Tomlin cycle. Who knows which side of the Mike Tomlin cycle you're going to be on. Then you're going to play Cincinnati. You should win. You know, you can put up, you know, your defense is going to give up 40. You should put up 45. Then you're going to be in New England, the team you already lost to. You're going to be at Cleveland, where you should win. Then you're hosting the Eagles, who are always scary, and then the Jets. So there are some teams that you should beat, but I'm just not confident in the Bills anymore. I'm really just not. And we look at the division, right? Like you said, you know, they're a game behind the Pats, but the Pats do all tiebreakers. So in reality, they're two games behind. I don't know if I would call the division out of reach, because the Patriots' schedule is easier, I would say. Not by a lot, because, you know, they do have to play a lot of these teams. You know, like they Pats do also have to play the Bengals. They've already played Cleveland. They've already played Pittsburgh. They've already played Tampa. You know, Pats still have to play the Jets, and in fact, they're playing them on Thursday night. So they're playing a lot of the same teams, and so far New England's just able to take better advantage of it. I wouldn't say that the division is out of reach for Buffalo, not by a long shot. However, I don't care what the odds makers say. I don't care what Vegas says. I don't care what the stats are. I think right now the AFC East is New England's to lose, though.
Yeah, at least
still favored to win, but my only counterpoint is I genuinely don't care.
Yeah. The division definitely isn't out of reach, but we could also do a little let's see how these guys finish type of thing real quick too. You know, let's look at the Bills schedule real quick, right? So
got another one. Adam says breaking news. He's got a graphic coming in. Well,
it's not breaking news. He just
said that like on our comms, so whatever. Here we go. Two games ahead plus three with the division win there.
They're one game ahead two games ahead or 1.5 games. Fuck.
That's really what I meant. Yeah, my bad. 1.5.
So Yeah, just the so New England's at 8-2, Buffalo's 6-3, Miami's 3-7, Jets are 2-7 for the listeners that can't see this. But looking at the so looking back at the Bills schedule real quick, so let's just go through it. Let's call the Bucks game a loss, right? Let's say they lose four of their last six. Texans, Thursday night football. Let's call this a win. So they're 1-1 in this stretch. Steelers, let's call that a win. 2-1. Bengals, let's call it a win. 3-1. Patriots, what do we want to call that as?
Toss up, tilting loss as of right now.
For loss for the Bills or the Pats?
Bills.
So they're 3-2. Browns win 4-2. Eagles.
Leaning loss.
4-3. Jets 5-3. So 5-3. So add up the numbers. That's 11-6 to end the season. And if you were to if you look on the Pats side, so obviously they got the Jets coming up, right? Jets on Thursday night. And then the week after they have the Bengals. So let's just chalk it up to 2-0 right there. Giants on Monday Night Football, 3-0. For giving the Pats the win against the Bills, that's 4-0. Then they got against a game against the Ravens. Honestly, we could say, let's call at least one of those two. Let's say the Bill or the Pats get a loss against the Ravens.
Okay.
Jets and Dolphins, we could probably chalk those up to wins.
Should be.
But the Dolphins could be a loss depending on how the standings look at that point in the season.
Yeah.
So there's a very real chance the Pats only lose one more game. Maybe two. Upwards of two in the next 2 months or next month and a half. And they would be at 13-4 if we were to give them two losses. So in that retrospect, the Pats would be still a game or two up on the Bills at that point of the season. So if you're the Bills, I think you're looking at this and you need to run the table. You need to run the table. Because there's too many games upcoming for the Patriots that they have a more than likely chance to win compared to the Bills, who have a slightly tougher schedule down the stretch here.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. For Buffalo, it's not a matter of – you can't count on New England to lose. You have to be able to control your own destiny. You need to run the table.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break when we come back. Brian Daboll fired from the New York Giants about 10 minutes ago from that just happened from the actual report. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk about that on the other side. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. Brian Daboll out as the Giants head coach. Broke the news a little earlier. Of course, y'all are going to be listening to this Tuesday, November 11th. Today, November 10th.
Well, we've already posted it on our Instagram. Yeah, we did. I think you should go like it.
Well, I'm recording a pod. But Brian Daboll fired after a 2-8 start to the 2025 season, and a little unfortunate as well. It's a Giants team that was showing a lot of promise, but was dealing with a lot of injuries. Of course, Malik Nabers and Cam Scataboo, most notably in terms of the injuries that the Giants offense has had to face. But Jackson Dart had shown to be a really good rookie quarterback, but the unfortunate thing, too, is that, well, coming into this season, Daboll was going to have a hot seat. He had a hot seat. But now they've lost 4 in a row. And 2 of these games, they blew a pretty good lead. Granted, it didn't help for the Giants that Jackson Dart got injured, and they got Russell Wilson, who just like can't play quarterback anymore, can't push the ball down the field anymore. Russell Wilson in at quarterback. So that doesn't help. What are your thoughts on this firing? I would have liked to have seen Dable get another year with Jackson Dart, but there does come a time where you need to make a change. And sometimes the best thing to do is move on and say, you know what? It's not working out. We need to plan for something else in the future.
Well, you know what? I'm just going to come out and say it. I don't think you should have got another year with Jackson Dart. Because even, look, I know Malik Nabers went down early in the season. So outside of him, even when they were healthy, you know, they had Dart and they had Scadaboo and all them, they still weren't winning. Like, no, I'm sorry. They weren't winning when they were most, even when they were mostly healthy before the injuries really started piling up, they weren't winning. Even when Dart was at his peak, they were still below 500. And not just like bad, they were snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. We all saw that Denver game. What was the excuse? There's not one. Like, oh yeah, we have Malik Nabers, we win. Yeah. Because last time I checked, Malik Nabers didn't play defense. So that doesn't explain that side of the ball completely imploding. And, you know, he's not your kicker either. So that doesn't explain your kicker just completely wetting himself when you needed him most. And honestly, yeah, this is for the best. And I hate to say it because I used to defend Dave. I'm like, you know, I think he's a good coach. He has potential. You know, look at that 2022 year. But it has dawned on me, finally, that 2022 was the exception and not the rule. You know, when they beat the Vikings in the playoffs, we all knew the Vikings weren't legit. They were, what were they, like the first 13 win team to have a negative point differential going into the playoffs? So yeah, honestly, that was the exception. And honestly, my opinions of Joe Shane have flip-flopped as well, because Shane, he's been drafting pretty well at least the last 2 years, and I think he's going to stay around, but Dable obviously is going to be canned. So Shane seems to do a decent enough job of supplying talent. You have to find a coach that can maximize it. Mike Kafka is, I don't know if you said this, I was also working on posting it, is going to be the interim head coach now officially. So we'll see if that turns it around. But Jackson Dart has a concussion, so I expect him to miss next week. So, yeah.
Yeah. So obviously this was the, as mentioned, second time this season they lost after leading by at least 10 points with under 4 minutes remaining, which was, they're now the second team since the merger to do so since the 2004 Seattle Seahawks. This is the third straight year that they've won two of their first 10 games. They're 11-33 since the start of the 2023 season. Also, this is the fourth time that Jackson Dart has been evaluated for a concussion this year, including the preseason. Insane. This is also the fourth double-digit lead on the road that New York has had that ended in a loss. Dable is 20-40-1 as the Giants head coach, which, you'd be surprised, puts him behind Ben McAdoo and Ray Perkins. This will be the sixth head coach since 2016 for the Giants with new interim, that being Mike Kafka, who was the assistant head coach and offensive coordinator, was also a finalist for multiple head coaching jobs over the past two seasons. So that could potentially tell you maybe what to expect. Along with all this other stuff from this season, Dable was also fined $100,000 for approaching the blue medical tent while Dar was being examined for a concussion earlier this season. There were obviously some questionable things that Dable was doing. Of course, read you the blown lead statistic as well. So writing was on the wall for Dable, unfortunately, especially, you know, it sucks to say too, you know, he was coach of the year for the NFL back in 22, the year that the Giants had a weird run with Daniel Jones beating the Minnesota Vikings, and the Vikings were hot that year too in the wild card game. But yeah, Giants head coach Brian Dable out of the job.
Yeah, for the best.
Anything else you want to touch on from this?
Oh, from this? No, because are we done with our segments or do we have one more?
We do have one more. We got the Rams and the Seahawks putting up 40-plus points against the Niners and the Cardinals, respectively. I say that respectively because that's the order that I put the Rams and the Seahawks.
Fair enough. I just want to say one thing real quick before we jump to that. Adam mentioned it. Chris, I don't know if you saw. The Cincinnati Bengals are opening the 21-day practice window for quarterback Joe Burrow.
Mm.
So the odds aren't great, but they're not dead yet. And even if they're technically out of the playoff running, they might just be looking to play spoiler. Maybe. Of course, no O-line, no defense, but hey, Burrow, Chase, and Higgins, that is a scary group.
Yeah, hey, maybe talk about that after Rams Seahawks. Let's see what we got for time.
No, but fair enough. Adam and I are talking behind the scenes. You were hosting. I can't blame you. But I'm just saying, so that's just something to keep an eye on. I don't think he's going to be back this week, but don't be shocked if they wait till like the third week of the 21 days.
All right. Yeah, it should be interesting to see what how the Bengals play this 21-day practice window. And depending on how their season rolls out, then, yeah, maybe we see more Burrow at the end of the season. All right. Rams Seahawks. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. Let's talk about the NFC West, the Rams and the Seahawks. Both winning by both putting up 40 plus. Seattle winning 44-22, and they did the same thing that they did to the Commanders last week, and that was winning in the first quarter. Game was out of reach. Rams basically the same thing. Niners kind of slowly came back into the game, try to make it a game or at least make it more respectable, but Rams were bawling against the Niners this week. Same thing with the Seahawks. Both Stafford and Darnold are playing at an MVP level this year. I mentioned this briefly too, and it's when you look at like the advanced statistics and all that, the EPA on deep balls, da da da. Like Drake May, obviously, we've been talking about how he is the first. He's at the top of every single leaderboard, especially historically, too. Mm-hmm. Probably having like the best deep ball passer season that we've seen in a long time. Sam Darnold is right up there with him. And that's something that isn't being talked about enough. And it helps, too, because JSN is having an offensive player of the year type of year as well. And there's a couple other guys, too, like Jonathan Taylor. He had himself another 3-touchdown game, 244 yards against the Falcons. But we're not talking about the Colts. Both teams are insane. The Rams offense, absolute nails. Seahawks, everything's working for them. The thing with the Seahawks is that they're not – everyone thinks of them as a run-first team. They're really a team that just knows how to run a good offense with 3 tight ends. And they're beating you with these 3 tight end sets. And you're going to be seeing a lot of more talk about that, especially from Greg Olsen. He's been talking about that a lot as well, and especially in how successful the Seahawks have been in running these 13 personnel is the more correct term to really be using. But they're able to be successful out of the 13 personnel because you can sell the run a lot more effectively with that even if the Seahawks run game isn't clicking that day. The Rams side, I mean, Kyren Williams, dog. Puka, dog. Davante Adams. He looks like the Davante Adams in Green Bay. He's having a fantastic year and stepped up and obviously filled in the wide receiver one role greatly when Puka went down. Basically, the NFC West is going to come down to these two teams and these two teams only. And it's a this might come down to a Week 18 matchup at the end of the year. And lo and behold, these two teams are facing off this week at 4:05 in LA. That'll be a game to watch.
That could very well be game of the week, Chris. You know what I mean? Oh, my God. So
quick look at the standings real quick to see where we are in all of this. So Seahawks and the Rams both at 7-2. Seahawks currently have the tiebreak because of the division record over the Rams. 49ers aren't far behind at 6-4, but in third place, and the Cardinals at 3-6. They're just a mess right now. The Niners you can write them off because of the injuries and just, I mean, the Seahawks and the Rams, they're just so dominant this year in general too. Thank you, Adam, for that graphic. So these two teams still have to play each other, as we mentioned, this coming week in LA. And then they face off one more time week 16, Thursday Night Football. So that's going to be a huge, huge game for playoff scenario wise, of course, and for the race for the NFC West. And the Seahawks face the Niners week 18, whereas the Rams, the Rams will be playing the Cardinals week 18. CJ, who has the edge in this division, and who do you think will come out on top?
Oh, every bone in my body wants to say the Rams, but I think I'm going to go with the Seahawks riding the hot hand. I really do, for one reason. I think the name of the game here is defense. And once again, with the Rams, what we're seeing is a really strong front seven, but a back four that's, it's not terrible, but the Seahawks back four is just better. You know, you guys like, Devin Witherspoon, you know, Reek Woolen, all those guys right there. Sorry, there's a thing that flew by. I don't know if you saw it, but, but here's the thing, but if I'm Sam Darnold, what I'm thinking is, all right, we were kind of in the situation last year, you know, when he was on the Vikings with the Lions, right? And how that would continuously flip-flop in the odds. And then they had a chance to secure the division, and he folded when the lights are brightest, which then snowballed into him folding in the playoffs. You cannot let that happen again, especially since, let's just say the Seahawks, right? You know, they're number one in the NFC. Theoretically, the Rams should be number two, but they are the top wild card seed, despite the fact they have a better record than Philly, Green Bay, and Tampa. So, yeah, the thing is, the Seahawks defense has been one of the sneakily better units in the league, right? Their pass rush isn't talked about, but they're playing at a more effective rate. They are, like I said, the back four, they have been playing pretty well as well. But the Rams, I definitely think that's going to hurt them a bit. And one more thing, the Seattle offensive line. Oh, my God, what a turnaround, right? I mean, you know, you grab a piece or two in free agency, grab Gray Zabel out of the draft, and boom, all of a sudden, you know, you're putting Geno on his butt every other play, and now you've got Sam Darnold actually staying upright and delivering the throws. And with Jaxon Smith-Njigba, they can stretch the field there. You know, they're using the 13 personnel set. That's working well. You've got a two-headed monster in the backfield. And, hey, Cooper Kupp. Hey, you know, he's still playing at a solid level. So I know that the Rams have a better odds to make the playoffs and win the division than Seattle, but I'm actually going to have to go Seattle here. I really am.
I'm feeling Seattle as well, but it's weird. Like, these two teams
they're pretty even.
Yeah. Both teams are allowing fewer than 20 points a game. They're both allowing fewer than 315 yards per game. It's really the pass defense for both sides where they're a little weak on. They're both kind of middle of the pack in terms of passing yards allowed this season. But when you look at their rushing yards, or at least rushing yards allowed per game, they're both top 10 in the league. They really are good at controlling the run game on the defensive side of the football. Pardon me.
You all right there?
Yeah, no, wind got into my pipe. Jesus.
It's cold. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, just making a joke. But I feel like it's really going to come down to quarterback play at this point, though. Like, can Sam Darnold be able to finish the season strong? I think that's going to be the biggest thing, right? Because Sam Darnold did not finish the season strong last year. And we know Matt Stafford can lead your team to a Super Bowl. Look at these statistics for JSN. On pace for 119 catches in 1,966 yards this season. And 9 touchdowns. He's been, as we said, he's been insane this year. But like I said, my thing is it's going to come down to the quarterback. Who's going to be able to finish strongest? And very, very well maybe that these two quarterbacks are going to be top two in MVP voting by the end of the season. Who knows? Especially if Sam Darnold is able to, like I said, finish strong. We know Matt Stafford's going to finish strong. How's Sam Darnold going to do?
Oh, well, anything else you want to touch from that?
No, honestly, I think we covered it. That's definitely going to be probably the division to watch.
Yeah.
You got two teams going head to head, maybe the NFC North as well. Hey, a lot of movement in the NFC. So, we'll see. But before we keep talking about the NFC, let's just see what Monday night has in store.
Facts. Yeah. Cause Packers, Eagles, that's going to be a good one. Obviously we're recording this at 1:24 PM. We're going to step aside for a quick break and jump to later tonight for the recap of Packers Eagles Monday Night Football. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
May not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
All right, we are now out of Monday Night Football. Week 10 is officially complete. And boy, we started Week 10 with a terrible game, and we end Week 10 with a terrible game. Now, I think the one thing I will say is that I think this game saw more of just really good defense, obviously, like compared to the offense. Yeah. It was more of a
defensive
two very good defenses shut down two solid offenses that have been a little inconsistent this season. But
yeah,
still,
at least it's not like Thursday night.
Yeah, Thursday night was just all around.
Yeah, that was just two offenses going out there and shooting themselves in the foot. This is more about good defense rather than bad offense. That's the only, and I mean the only thing that's saving it.
Yes. Eagles come out with a win 10-7. It got to a point where I was hoping for the scoreless tie to happen. It got to that point for me. I was very happy that it was a scoreless tie at halftime. Yeah, it happened in the second quarter. I wanted it to be scoreless going into the half. It was to a T magical. You won't believe this, but I even predicted the final 3 plays of that first half correct.
I don't, but go on. No, I'm kidding. I do. You don't have any reason to lie about it.
Yeah. My friends will vouch for me on that. But yeah. Anyways, looking at this game itself, so with the win, Eagles now have themselves. I should have pulled up the standings before I started on this, but
they should probably have like the, I would think the 2 seed still.
They have the 1 seed because of their strength of victory shot up over Seattle's. So Eagles currently hold the top spot in the conference. Seattle's in second. Eagles also have a better conference record than Seattle at 6-1 compared to Seattle's 4-2. Wanted to throw out there as well. Lions in third, Bucks in fourth. Rams are at the first wild card spot at 7-2, as kind of what we discussed earlier. Bears and Packers round out the 6-7 spot of the NFC standings. But this, like, I think that Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, dude, what is wrong with me? I just named Mike Tirico, who's not even on Monday Night Football anymore. And then I went to a completely different freaking TV company in CBS and was about to pull Tony Romo. God, what is going on? Troy Aikman and Joe Buck, I think, said it best in the fact that I don't think either coach is really coming out of this game very happy, regardless of a win or loss. Obviously, Nick Sirianni's probably thinking, Jesus Christ, like, I got away with one there. I guess we'll address the play now. Nick Sirianni elects to go for it on 4th and 6 within, like, well within field goal range for Jake Elliott. Yeah, it's a little windy, but
yeah, it was also kind of long too. They were like around the 40, if not just outside. That was gonna be like almost a 60 yarder.
I'm pretty sure they were at like the 38 yard line.
But still, so you add that plus, dude, that's still gonna be like
mid 55 yarder.
Huh? Yes. I don't know, man.
I mean, Elliott would have nailed it, I think. But anyways, yeah, it would have been a tough kick regardless. But just the play call in general, just running like a go route for AJ Brown, and it's like, wasn't even that good of a ball. Like, I feel like you got to go somewhere else in your bag for that, for a play call like that. But either way, it didn't hurt Sirianni. Even a punt would have been, or an arm punt. Maybe that's what they were going for with that Jalen Hurts throw, for all I know. But either way, didn't hurt the Eagles because the first play that the Packers ran was a deep ball for Christian Watson that went incomplete. And then that kind of ended up shooting their chances because they ended up going over the middle to Dobbs. Or not Dobbs, the other guy. Can't think of his name, but...
Watson?
Nope, not Watson.
Wicks?
Nope.
Melton?
Melton, thank you. Yeah. They got Melton over the middle. He was in bounds. And they spiked the ball at 5 seconds. It was too far for McManus to kick, and he was dealing with an injury. They were better off just throwing a Hail Mary at that point. But, yeah, this is back-to-back weeks now that the Packers have put up stinkers at home. Granted, this week was against the Eagles. They're tough defense. But last week against the Panthers, something's got to give here. Pretty sure this is the first time since 2018 that they've lost back-to-back games at home, yeah, at home as well. So now the Packers are, not surprisingly because of the division they're in and the conference, they're currently holding the last spot, the last wild card spot in the playoff race at the moment. And right behind them is the team that they lost to, the Carolina Panthers. So this could get into a, or 49ers as well, but either way, you don't want the Niners to get hot. You don't want to fall into a weird lull where all of a sudden the Carolina Panthers have a chance to knock you out of the playoffs. You don't. So they're in a weird spot. CJ, your thoughts.
I don't think the Eagles won. I think they escaped the game. And when I say escaped, I don't mean escape Green Bay. I mean they escaped themselves. Going for it on 4th and 6, it's not like it was 4th and 1 or something you could tush-push your way out of. Oh, no, no, no. That was 4th and 6. That was horrible. Why would you do that? I mean, don't get me wrong. You didn't win. You got lucky. And I know what they say, oh, a win is a win is a win. To anyone who uses that term, my response is, you don't watch sports and it shows. This, once again, wasn't just a win. It was an ugly win. I see that game and I have questions now. This is a win that raises questions. I'm not sold. I mean, granted, the Eagles were kind of shaky, but you didn't win. You got lucky. And if anything, my questions and my doubts have been amplified from this game. And Green Bay, you know, you're allowed to play consistent football before Toyotathon, right? Is Jordan Love aware of this? Like, someone's got to say, dude, you're allowed to do this before Toyotathon. Many people would be happier if you did, but here you are, not playing good football before that. And just this game was just so... It was a defensive slugfest, granted, but my big takeaway here isn't even how it ended, other than the fact Brandon McManus had one of the worst final kicks I think I've ever seen, ever. That might be a prison kick the way it got shanked, but it's about the tush push, and you know, if you've been watching the show, I've defended it many times, but it's getting to a point where it's got to go. It's getting ridiculous. And I know the Eagles fans are going to say, stop it if you don't like it. Okay, how about this? People, what if you actually followed the rules? Because when you look at how the tush push is formed, right? It's an illegal formation every time. The center's head is over the ball and you have guards that are over the belt line of the center, which... Chris, you played football. Is that not a legal formation?
Over the belt line. Well, yeah, they can be over the belt line of the center. They can't be behind the belt line of the center.
Oh, no, that's what I meant. They're behind, or, you know, that's what I meant. Sorry.
They're not all behind the belt line. They're up on the line, man. That's not a legal formation.
But you can't have that many guys on the line at once, though.
No, you don't. You can have as many guys on the line as you freaking want, actually. You can't have X amount of guys in the backfield.
You beat me there, but okay. But that still doesn't change the fact that the center's head is over the ball.
Yeah.
So no, okay. I thought the belt line thing.
That's more or less offsides than it is a legal formation.
Okay. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, I'm still right. That's still a penalty.
I'm just correcting you on. I'm just
I get that. I do. But regardless, it was, you know, wrong point, but the outcome is still right. You know what I mean?
Every time they
line up to do the tush push, it's a penalty. The center's head is over the ball. Like, if you just adjusted it, that's cool. And second, every time they do it, it's a false start. Someone jumps too soon. Every single time. They literally said it on the show. Oh, Philly got away with one. Dickerson jumped. And every time they run the tush push, someone jumps. That's like the nature of the play. That's literally like how it is. Cause you know, someone's also got to line up to like push Hurts and stuff as well. And they're getting a running start before they snap the ball. In some cases, not every case, but some. Or you have a lineman that goes out to, like, strike first. So either way, they're lining up over the ball, which, like you said, is offsides. And on top of that, it's a false start every time. Hell, Green Bay did it. Green Bay literally ran the tush push, and there was also a false start that was not called. I don't even have an issue with the play existing. Just follow the rules. It's the fact that you can literally throw the yellow flag every single time you run it, and it never happens, I think is really what people are getting pissed off about.
Yeah. No.
Also, one criticism that I had, even from when I supported it, which I'll echo again, is that I just think it's weird how offensive players can push each other towards the first down marker, but defenders can't. Like, let's just say, like, a linebacker can't run up and push the defensive tackle from behind. I don't get why the offense can do it, but the defense can't. Like, I legitimately don't understand. Is it a safety thing? Is it like, I don't
get
it?
Well, it was like when they created the leverage penalty, it was a safety thing because, you know, the center, like, the center is in a prone position. So, at least on like special teams, punts, kicks like that, that's where it was mainly prevalent. In terms of like this the open field stuff, it's a little different,
but they still can't.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, you should be, if that's the case, you should be able to allow them to do it. Like, you either allow the defenders to push on each other as well, or yeah. And honestly, it's not even that they could do it well at a high rate, because you're seeing a lot of teams being able to replicate it. Not to the successful degree Philly does, but still, to some extent, they're able to. It's just that it's a penalty every time, and I don't think I've ever seen it called. I mean, I'm sure it has been.
No, it has been called, but it's few and far between. That's the only problem.
Yeah, so you either got to, like, blow the whistle every time they do it. Like, when you see the center's head over the ball, you blow the whistle and you throw the flag. Like, you kind of have to flag maybe not ban it, but you have to flag it out of existence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dean Blandino said it perfectly like a month ago, and he said that this is the most ridiculously officiated rule or officiated play in football. And yeah, that alone,
it literally breaks two rules just by existing. And the fact that they don't do anything is like, genuinely starting to like get annoying.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. The officiating part of it is going to be the sole reason why it gets banned from the league. All right. That is our recap of the Monday night slugfest that was the Packers and the Eagles. Let's move on to our week 10 top three, bottom three. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This week wasn't as exciting as other weeks, to say the least, unfortunately, at least compared to last week, with the amount of not great games. The entire 4 o'clock window was blowouts. Sunday night football was a blowout. Most of the early games were blowouts up until like right to the last minute. I think there was like 5 minutes left in the Pats Bucks game, and they were the only team at that, or the only game at that point that was it was being decided by less than 10 points. Granted, ended up being some others. With that being said, we'll start with the Patriots. A statement win against Tampa Bay. I love Drake May. Drake May and the Patriots. Mike Vrabel, Stephon Diggs.
Give me some of that. Come on. Hey, give me some of that. Yeah.
I love that.
I love it too. Pats are riding hot. 7-game win streak. They're going to be threatening to make a Super Bowl run. At the very least, a playoff run. Texans, big comeback win. Down 19 in the fourth. Davis Mills turns into the best QB in the league. And the Texans get the comeback win against the Jaguars, 36-29. Pretty much keeping their season like somewhat alive. Out of the blue, out of left field, is what they're now. They're now 4-5. Like, yeah, the division's probably gonna be out of reach because of the Colts, but that wild card is sneakily kind of still there for the Texans. Just they can't figure it out on offense.
The
Rams, huge win against the 49ers, 42-26, putting up 40 on the Niners, winning by multiple scores, which against the Niners is very tough to do. Hurt, not hurt, doesn't matter, especially in a divisional game. And the Niners, as I was just saying, like right on the cusp of playoff spots still.
Also, the Niners beat them earlier in the year. Don't forget that. So this was an important revenge game for division and the conference.
Yep. And now the Rams are still right there for the top of the NFC West with the Seahawks not having the tiebreaker, but setting up nicely for next week for them.
Also, I want to touch on the Pats real quick. I didn't get a chance to, but I said this earlier in the episode, and I'll say it again. The narrative that they haven't beat any good teams, while already flimsy, is officially dead. Like, it's going into retirement. You can't argue it. I mean, once again, you could say the Bucs were banged up. Okay, well, so was New England. Like, what's your point? Show me a team that's not.
Yeah, I agree. Bottom three, the Buffalo Bills. Wow.
What even are the Bills at this point is my legitimate question, Chris. What are the Bills? Because you go out there, you know, you beat the Chiefs, you beat a healthy Ravens squad in week one, but you drop games to the Falcons and the Dolphins? I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand either. James Cook only had 53 yards. Granted, they kind of need to start airing it out at one point, but they also let up 197 rushing yards, 174 of them from Achan. And Josh Allen looked bad. Speaking of looking bad, the Carolina Panthers looked terrible against the Saints. Something about the Panthers, it's the moment that they are favored in a game, they just don't show up. In this case, they lose to Tyler Shuck and the freaking Saints.
Yeah, the Saints only put up 17, so it's not like there's any reason you should have lost.
Yeah.
Once again, like I said, with what are the Bills, what are the Panthers? You know, you upset the Packers, then you get dominated by the Saints? Well, I get it's a divisional game, but I'm sorry. Even when they're above 500, like, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. They're better than they were. They're not a team to take lightly, but they're also unserious.
Yeah, and if they win this game, they're tied with the Niners, in that first team out spot of the wild card. They're two spots out right now, but they'd be right there. They'd be one game out. Now they're two games out. So that just makes it hurt that much more, especially with the big win against the Packers last week, along with the fact that the Packers couldn't get it done tonight. Last team on the...
I just said true.
Yeah. Last team on the bottom three, the other half of the Texans game, the Jaguars blowing said 19-point lead in the fourth quarter to Davis Mills. They allowed 26 unanswered in the fourth quarter. 26 unanswered points in the fourth quarter. This is another team that you were saying with the other two. What are the Jaguars?
Yeah, they beat Kansas City, and then you blow a 3-score lead to Davis Mills. Disgusting, absolutely abhorrent. At this point for the Jags, my question is, what's it going to take? The team itself isn't bad. They've got a lot of good pieces on both sides of the ball, but they don't click. They don't gel. Nothing about that team really flows. So once again, my question, what's it going to take? You can keep cycling through head coaches from Doug Marrone to Doug Peterson to Liam Cohen. Hate to say it, but no matter how many top picks you get, I don't think Lawrence might be the guy.
It's like
he's starting caliber, but you know.
It's either he's not the guy, or they need to get rid of Shane Waldron because he's
for sure. That too. I forgot. Yeah. Shane Waldron, man. Yeah, he's got to go.
Yeah, he's got to go. I don't know how he has a job anywhere.
Yeah, like we've already broke it down the show. It's literally proven like he makes offenses worse wherever he goes.
There's like if you look at next gen stats, it'll show you like I was telling you about this literally last year, like when he was over in Seattle. Like look at look at the route tree that DJ Moore.
Chris, it goes beyond that. Like goes beyond that.
No, because, I know, but I'm saying from the example I was saying.
Oh, continue. Because I have one more thing after you.
I know the Cooper Kupp part as well. Like,
The instant Waldron leaves, Kupp wins the Triple Crown. That's not a coincidence.
Yeah. And then, like, when you look at the route tree DJ Moore was running in Chicago, it's literally just hitches and fades. And that's the only thing he was running. And then it was the same thing with JSN after Waldron showed up in Seattle. It was the same exact thing. Now look at him. He's on pace for damn near 120 catches and almost 2,000 yards. Like,
and imagine Adunze has been playing better now that Waldron's gone as well.
Yep.
And now you have Brian Thomas Jr., who was, I think, top three in offensive rookie of the year voting last year. Now he's a shell of himself. The route running's terrible. He has no hands. Like, that is the Shane Waldron effect. Like, at this point, it's proven. Happens once, that's, you know, that's just bad luck. Twice is, like, kind of fluky, but three times, that's a trend.
Yeah. Like, imagine Brian Thomas Jr. without Shane Waldron.
And Travis.
Like, the moment Liam Cohen screws on his head correctly and fires Shane Waldron, imagine what Brian Thomas Jr. will do next year when he isn't scared to catch the football.
Yeah. Hey, I agree.
Yeah. That's all the scheduled content that we have for you today. Anything you want to add on your end, CJ?
Yeah, as usual,
pick'em.
We got to do our pick'em. And remember how last week we all tied and Tuck won? Well, this week we have the opposite. We all, instead of having three losers and a winner, we now have three winners and a loser. Ooh. No offense, Chris. You got six right. Myself, Adam, and Tuck all tied with eight. I was actually really hoping for your pick and the Packers to be right, because if it was, then we would have all had seven, and that would have been funny. But no, Adam, myself, and Tuck had eight. Chris had six.
I was really hoping to get the Falcons one. That would have been slick.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is all the scheduled content that we have for you today. Thank you for tuning in to another Tuesday episode of the Fumble Risk Podcast. New episode coming out on Friday at 8 a.m. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram, FulmerRuski_podcast, and our new Twitter, new X handle as well. Search up FulmerRuski Podcast. Keep up with the pod and latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, he's CJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich. We'll see you on Friday. Over and out.